Oh, it's so good to be here with you. If you're the type that likes following actual Bible, 1 Corinthians 15. If not, we've created some slides that make it very easy to follow along with. It's been so good getting to know. For all of you that are my friends, I love you. And for all of you that I hope will be my friend one day, I can't wait to get to know all of you. But before we get into this, the only thing I want to say is after this session, we have a resource table set up out there. It will resource you greatly. There's some great teaching material out there in USB and audio and video. 100% of the profit we give away to the poor and the afflicted. We have three orphanages in China that look after children with mental disabilities. We also have a rescue home in Cape Town that gets girls out of sex trafficking. So the only thing I would ask you, if you don't want anything, it's great small group material. It's great for personal edification. However you want to use it, it's fine by me. If you don't want anything, though, God bless. I'll see you next time. If you know you're going to grab something before the conference is over, if you could be deliberate about that and do it in this next break. After the next session starts, we have to tear it down and take it to the post office and do what we need to do because I'm flying in the morning to Singapore, okay? So if you could just do that, in the first 15, 20 minutes, that would just be fantastic. So I want to start by relieving some anxiety. People tell me, pastors are under extreme stress, and I get that. And sometimes pastors come to me and they confide things in me, and they'll be like, oh, man, I'm so anxious and this kind of stuff. And I want to speak to that just for the first 3 or 4 minutes because, listen, if you regularly engage topics that you're not qualified to engage in, and then on top of that, you carry the weight of those people's response to your engagement and what we don't know what we're talking about, we're going to be anxious. There are things that we are just simply not called to. You are not called to preach into every email you get from that one disgruntled church person. You're not. You're not called to go back through some of the brilliant teaching yesterday from Pastor Brett. The path of ascent is decent, and you're not called to solve all the problems. You're only called to solve what God gave you to do, right? And you're not going to solve all the... Look, I started coming to Perth in 2005. I'm confident that in 2005, they were still fixing the Tonkin Highway, right? I landed the other day, and they're still fixing the same flipping road, right? Kingdoms have risen and fallen. Perth, fixing a road, right? We're not called to fix all that. We're not called to fix all the climate stuff. We're not called to fix, everything about health. We're not called to fix politics, for sure. We're not called to be experts in sexuality, and we're certainly not called to be amateur predictors of doom. You can't sing, whatever you're up to something good, and everything was defeated at the cross, but the world's getting worse and worse. Don't ever buy into that stuff. The world's not getting worse. It's not. You don't judge success on a plotted point. You judge success on the trajectory line. And we should own that narrative. The world's getting better because of the work of Christ in the world, not worse. Come on. Like if I said, I have $1 million, right? And I have no debt. Am I winning or am I losing? You wouldn't have any idea. What if I inherited $100 million? And I'm an idiot. I'm down to my last million. Well, I'd be losing. But if I started with nothing and became a millionaire, I'm winning because you don't judge success on plotted points. You judge success on the trajectory line. And because of the work of Jesus Christ in this world, the world's getting better and better and better. There is nothing worse than 100 years ago other than pollution and divorce rates. That's about it. Everything else is getting better. Life expectancy of Jesus' day was 32. By 1550, it had ballooned to 35. By 1850, it was 43. Life expectancy didn't cross 50 years old until 1948. That's within my dad's lifetime. Now we're living into our 80s. Is God done redeeming long life? No. Is it better? Yes. 72 years ago was 1950. Would you rather be a woman today or 1950? It's not a trick question. Or 1850. Would you rather go to the dentist today? Or 1950? Or 1850? Would you rather have a colonoscopy today? Or 1950? Oh, hello. Everybody getting that imagery right there? Is God done redeeming these things? No. Is it better? You'd better believe it. You'd better believe it. Somebody with a straight face the other day said, Shane, I think this is the worst time to ever be alive if you're a Christian. What? Which leads me to Nero. So, if you got caught practicing Christianity under the rule of Nero, he had the military hold you down. He took a stick and he rammed it up your butt. It's called impaling. When you died from the internal injuries, they would then set you up and plant you, and the stick would go through your mouth. They would then cover you in tar and set you on fire and use you as a human candlestick to keep his backyard alight. So whatever your problem is with Albo, it ain't Nero. Come on, let's have some perspective. Look, the lack of perspective is the enemy of hope. The lack of perspective is the enemy of hope. When we start looking at one plotted point and universalize, come on. So the first century Christians, they wrote to a guy named Paul and said, what do we do with government policies that oppress us? Like, the government policies are oppressing us. And the policy was put in place by Nero. Okay? Nero. So Paul writes back, and in Titus chapter 3, I think I can alleviate about 50% of the pressure here. Check this out. This is a trustworthy saying, and I want you to stress these things so that those who trusted in God may be careful to devote themselves to doing what is good. These things are excellent and profitable for everyone. In other words, spend 100% of your energy doing good in your world. Devote yourself. But, keep going, next slide. But avoid means to spend no energy doing something. Avoid foolish controversies and genealogies and any arguments and quarrels about the law, because they're unprofitable and useless. Selah. How have we done with that during the COVID-19 pandemic? Were Christians known for being the people doing good in their world, or were Christians known for engaging in all kinds of controversies and quarrels about the law? And it's right there. Be set free from that. Because we've suffered. We did. The whole world suffered. Now let's be clear. We Perth suffered. We Western Australia suffered. We didn't Melbourne suffer. And Melbourne didn't Burma suffer, right? So this is all perspective as well. Nonetheless, we suffered. And suffering gets a word. Suffering, grief, pain, death. Christianity is not a movement that says those things get no word. It just says those things don't get the last word. Which leads me to resurrection. Resurrection in the Christian worldview gets the last word. Death leads to new life. Which leads me to 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15 is Paul's dissertation on how to see the world through resurrection. Resurrection isn't something to believe in. Resurrection is something to fundamentally shape the way we see all things. But remember, it's very hard to unlearn something intellectually that you learned emotionally, right? So if you were learned something and it was attached to your emotions and it was negative, it's very hard to then unlearn that thing intellectually. That's part of the reason we beat our head against the wall when people just don't get it. Oftentimes, we're trying to get people to unlearn something or repent about something they're learning intellectually when we're fighting something that they learned emotionally. And that can be very, very difficult. So Paul's talking about how to see the world in a way that death, struggle, grief, doubt doesn't get. It's not that it doesn't get any word. It just doesn't get the last word, right? And he says some wild things like, so you see, the mortal must take on the immortal to inherit the imperishable. So, you know, there's no need to baptize dead people, which leads to all kinds of questions like, was that ever actually a problem? He says things like, hey, don't sit around arguing about the afterlife. That's just dumb, which, again, I think we should take heed to that. But like all great rabbis, he summarizes his whole 57-verse treatise in one verse. So instead of looking at all 57, let's just look at his summary. Check this out. Next slide. 1 Corinthians 15, 58. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is never in vain. What if we actually believe that? If you weren't here yesterday, I won't re-say this, I'll just restate it, that according to some social anthropologists, What's fixing to happen starting January 2023 to January 2026 is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime three-year rush back to people wanting to be regrounded in spirituality as a response to pandemics, because that's what's happened in every pandemic that's ever happened in the history of the world, which means we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And this is not the time for a soft reentry. This is a time for risk. This is a time for a risk culture, a faith culture, a culture where you give it a go. This is the time to put the throttle to the ground. Right? And to do that, we have to see the world through resurrection. What does that mean? It means we believe that if we're doing it for God, it cannot be wasted. This means that if you're doing it for God, you cannot waste your life. Even if they don't respond like you think they should respond, you didn't waste your life. And let me say something that should be obvious. Paul wrote this before he knew that what he gave his life to worked. Paul died in 57. The Gospels were written in 70. Paul died having never known if what he gave his life to was ever going to catch on and change the world. But he's like, I see the world through resurrection. If I do it for God, I can't. Hey, if they accept it, great. If they don't, I still haven't wasted my life. Nothing is wasted. My encouragement to you today is this: we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and we had better take it. My second encouragement to you is that if you keep going and everything you do for God, nothing can be wasted. That's the encouragement. But my challenge is this: there's two ways to do something for God. I'm going to skip the part of this talk where I challenge whether people are doing stuff for God. You're a group of pastors at a pastor's conference. I'm assuming you're doing it for God. I'm assuming no one is in this for the money, right? I'm assuming we're doing it for God. But here's the issue with that. In doing it for God, there's two ways to do something for God. One way's not profound. One day's more profound. The one way to do things for God that's less profound is it's my duty to serve God. We do it out of duty. And here's the thing, there's nothing wrong with doing something out of duty, it's just not profound. As soon as you add, it's my duty, it takes some of the luster away. Yeah. Like if somebody, like let's say I visited somebody's house and the wife makes this unbelievable meal for her husband and two kids, it's like off the charts unbelievable. And they're appreciative, they're like, wow, honey, what inspired you to do something as awesome as this? If her response is, well, it's my duty. Well, as soon as it's about duty, it loses some of its, but if it's inspired by love, that's a whole nother thing. There's two ways to serve God. One is out of duty, and the other is by seeing our life as an act of worship, a living sacrifice. In one way, if we do it out of duty, it had better work. It's not wrong, it just had better work. But if we see our life as an act of worship, regardless of their response, you can't waste your life. I don't have to be prophetic to tell you that you tried things in the last 2.5 years that got shut down. I don't have to do that. I just know that. And the tendency is to universalize that disappointment, like, man, I'm wasting my life. And this is like, no. If you're doing it for God, nothing is wasted. The question is, are we doing what we're doing for God out of duty, or are we doing what we're doing out of sacrifice? Worship, surrender. That's the question. Which leads me to a great story from the Old Testament. It's a story that's so important, it's actually told twice from two different perspectives, from two different sets of details. It's about a guy named David who kills a giant, gets popular with everybody except for the king. The king starts chasing him around. What we learn in this story is that David's this bad dude, right? He's Liam Neeson from Taken, right? He's Jack Bauer on speed. If you're too old for those references, he's Rambo. If you're too old for that, he's John Wayne. All right, so he's like this bad dude, right? Like bear, bring it. Lion, come get you some. Giant Philistine warriors, come on, man. He's a bad dude. But we also find that as awesome as he is at butt kicking, he's equally as bad at hiding. Everywhere he goes to hide, people know where he is, right? He just runs into people everywhere. And so he finally ends up in a cave. And when he gets to the cave, 400 people already knew where he was going and met him there. Which leads to this observation: bro, as good as you are at fighting, when it comes to hiding, frankly, you suck. And watch what happens. Next slide. This is 1 Samuel. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam, and his brothers and father's household heard about it. They went down to him there. And all those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. 400. So 400 marginalized, distressed, indebted people want him to be their leader. What's that called? That's called pastoring. 400 people don't know anything, want you to lead them. From there, they went to Mizpah and Moab, and he said to the king, would you let my father and mother come and stay with you till I learn what God... In other words, I can't have my mom in a cave with 400 men with issues. This isn't safe. This is ridiculous. So he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him as long as David was in the stronghold. So if you're a linear learner, and you're already sort of starting to lose me, I did this for you. Next slide. So David's being hunted. He's being surrounded by, you know, people with issues and his family. And the enemy has his hometown under assault. The idea was somebody from Bethlehem killed my guy, and we don't know who it was, so we're just going to start killing everybody in there. And we might get lucky, right? This is the account of that. Next slide. This is the 2 Samuel version. During harvest time, 3 of the 30 chief warriors came down to David at the cave of Adullam, while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. They're surrounding Bethlehem. That's what that is. And at that time, David was in the stronghold, and the Philistine garrison was at Bethlehem. So the enemy has his hometown. And David longed for water, and he said, oh, if someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem. Now, let's just stop right there. Is David being literal? Obviously not. He's longing for simpler times. He's having a revelation that sometimes you pray for God to promote you, and then when God promotes you, it doesn't look like what you thought, right? Sometimes you ask God to grow your thing, and when he grows your thing, you end up in a cave with people with issues, right? David is shepherding. He's like, God, I want you to promote me. David has done nothing wrong. He's killed the giant. He's acted in faith. He brought cheese to his brothers. He served the king. He's done all this stuff. And God says, all right, I'll promote you. And he ends up in a cave with people with issues. Sometimes what we think, be careful what you wish for, because sometimes what we think we want doesn't look like exactly what we pictured it. And then we start longing for simpler times. But what happens is three of these guys with issues take him literally. The way I picture it is like, I don't know if you remember the old movie, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. With Clark Griswold's like, you know what? What I wouldn't give for my good-for-nothing boss to be taken from his mansion across town in his pajamas, wrapped up in a red bow, and brought right here to see me, right? Obviously being metaphorical about annoyance, and stupid cousin Eddie goes, you serious, Clark? And he goes and does it. This is how I picture this. So three of the mighty warriors broke through the Philistine lines, drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem, and carried it back to David. Next slide. But he refused to drink it. Oh, man. You walk 40 Ks through enemy lines to get this guy one drink of water, and he doesn't respond like you think he should. Ooh. Instead, he poured it out before the Lord. Far be it from me, Lord, to do this. Is it not the blood of the men who went at the risk of their lives? And David would not drink it. Now, if you're a linear learner, you got lost in some of that. So I did a 90-second summary for the linear learners. Here it is. Adullam was a fortified city to protect Judah and refugees in times of danger. It was a series of caves and tunnels that would have made it very hard to find an attack. David is there as a refugee from this jealous, powerful man. Adullam's only 2 miles from where David killed Goliath. So from an elevated position, he could have easily seen where it would have worked. He could have avoided all of this if he'd have just minded his own business. Next slide. David is surrounded by marginalized, discontented, indebted people. That's not very energizing. David grew up in Bethlehem. Bethlehem's 12 miles, which is 20 Ks from Adullam. David seems to be using a figure of speech, longing for simpler days. Next slide. Three of these guys with issues take him serious, and they walk 12 miles or 20 Ks, mostly behind enemy lines to get him some water. After walking 40 kilometers through enemy lines, David refuses to drink it and pours it out. And this is where I want to park for the rest of this session. David turns the act from an act of duty to an act of worship. There's 2 ways to serve God. And whatever way you choose to serve God really matters. Because if you're doing it for God, you keep going because nothing is wasted. What if we believed what Paul said? You can't waste your life if you gave it a go for God. This is not a season. I can't tell you how passionate I am about this. Churches had better start taking some risk and going forward and acting in faith and doing things that don't make us feel very comfortable, that we're not so sure to work, and just give it a go. Why? But to do that, we have got to believe. If it works, great. If it doesn't, it's still not that we've wasted our life. It depends on whether we're doing it out of duty or whether we're doing it out of worship. David's like, They see what they did as a duty. I see what they did as holier than that. I see what they did as an act of worship. And he pours it out. Now, let's ask, when you look at the Bible, you got to ask two questions. One, what happened? And two, more importantly, what's happening in me right now because of what happened? That's my best effort explaining what happened. Now let's look at what's happening in us all right now because of what happened. Next slide. So sometimes you're in the center of God's will in a cave with people with issues. You cannot gauge the quality of your ministry solely based on the current plotted point circumstance you find yourself in. You do not judge success on one plotted point. You judge success on the trajectory line. That's true in everything. Sometimes God promotes you, and as a part of your promotion, you find yourself in a cave with people with issues. Sometimes people misunderstand you. You're speaking in metaphor, and they take you literally. Most people in this room communicate at some point for a living. I communicate for a living. And most of the time, people like it. Sometimes people misunderstand you. And then they write you emails, and they're very loud about it, right? And you got some, I got an email not too long ago from a 16-year-old dressing me down. And I'm thinking, everything in me wanted to go, I've forgotten more than you know, bro. But I didn't. And it was just a basic, and then what happens is you can get 10,000 great emails, but everybody in here knows the one bad one is the one you go with bed, you can't get it out of your head, it just sticks in there. Like sometimes people misunderstand you. Next slide. As you grow, there are times you'll long for simpler times. That's just a part of growth. A part of growth is by faith, believing God for the next thing, believing God for promotion, believing God to grow your ministry, believing. But as a part of that, there'll be times you'll take deep breaths and go, oh man, I wish I just was back in Bethlehem tending sheep, having some of that old water. Like, remember when it wasn't so complicated? Remember when we asked God to grow our church, you know, and you know, we had 20 people and my mother-in-law, and that was stressful. And then he said, we just want something big, you know. Because, you know, big churches don't have problems, you know. Look, if you're stressed with 20 people and your mother-in-law, you don't really want something big, right? But you ask God, hey, God, grow us, move us, I want to change. And then God does it, and then there comes a slew of problems, and you're like, oh, man. Sometimes I just want to go back to that simpler. Like, remember when we were first married? We didn't have any money or nothing. It didn't matter because we lived on love, you know. Remember that? And then we thought, you know what would be a good idea? To bring humans into our world that bring no resources to the table, but they eat everything. Man, we thought that was a good idea. This is why every great marriage occasionally give the kids to the grandparents or somebody, and they go off for the weekend by themselves to drink from that older well. Remember, we had no money, so taxes weren't really an issue. And now my accounting bill is more than I used to make, you know? It's like, oh man. Remember, we had a small house and small bills and we were happy? And then somebody talked us into, you know what we're doing now? We're paying money every month for rooms we never actually walk in so that people we don't like will think we're more successful than we actually are. I just signed up for 30 years of entirely too bad. Oh, man. Let's say it this way. Next slide. Far be it from me, Lord. See, David saw this as sacred. He saw his world sacramentally. And he took their act from an act of duty to an act of worship. And he does something that doesn't make any sense to us. He does something in their world called the drink offering. In Numbers 28, it says, on the first of the new moon of every month, you are to kill a goat, and you're to pour out half a hin of wine and a quarter hin of water. To just acknowledge that all resources come from God. right. We don't do that anymore, even though it's in the Bible. We don't do that anymore because we've progressed to just like acknowledging it. But that's what David's doing. David's like, hey, this is too holy. See, next slide, let's say it this way. Maybe it's the sacrifice that makes it sacred. And if the sacrifice makes it sacred, then nothing is wasted. Let me ask you a question. What you're engaging in with your ministry in the next couple weeks, are you doing it for God? And if you're doing it for God, are you doing it out of duty or are you doing it out of sacrifice? Out of worship, out of surrender. Because if you're doing it out of surrender, sacrifice, worship, then nothing is wasted. You cannot waste your life. This was a little while ago now. I was in a grocery store and there was this lady in her late 50s probably. And she was guiding a blind guy around in his late 20s. He was blind. He had a little thing. And she had him by the arm. And they were moving really slow. And she's being so nice to him, you know. I made a couple of assumptions. She's either the caregiver or she's the mom. Because the age was appropriate. But she was being so nice. All right, hang on. Now, two more steps. We're going to turn right. And maybe he was a little mentally disabled, too. I don't know. But what if I'd have walked up to her and said, ma'am, what are you doing? You're 58 years old. You only have so much time to live. If he doesn't get better, you're wasting your life. Well, if I did that, that would make me a jerk. But the truth of it is that if she's doing it out of duty, kind of have a point. But if she's doing it out of love and sacrifice and restoring dignity to a human being, whether he gets better or whether he doesn't matter. Her sacrifice makes her act holy regardless of result. Your next sermon, if you're doing it for God out of an act of sacrifice and worship, I hope they buy it. I hope they respond. I do, because it's in their best interest to respond. But whether they do or whether they don't does not negate your service. If you do it out of duty, they better respond. See, sometimes people do it out of duty, and when they don't respond, we just become manipulators of the response so that we feel better. We're not called to manipulate the response. There's no vacancy in the Trinity for any of us. As a matter of fact, I would just say clearly, if the Holy Spirit isn't moving you right now to respond to this message, don't. Who am I? We have to take stewarding our gift seriously without taking ourselves so seriously, right? Like one of the greatest singers I've ever heard in a church ever. I was at this conference and I was on the front row, and don't judge me for this. I can't sing, one, but I don't sing in worship because I speak every day and my voice will go. And so I have to be worshipful without singing. Sometimes that's harder than others, but I just can't. So I was going through my sermon in my head, and anyway, she hit that first note, and I was like, oh, my goodness. So I asked the pastor, I said, who is that? He said, oh, she won third place on Australian Idol. I was like, I can tell. Anyway, it was just a different level, you know. And so I was talking to her. She got a fully guaranteed Sony record contract. 3 months later, her dad got, like, early onset Parkinson's, early onset dementia, and things like that.